Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
Welcome to Crosspoint.
We are an inclusive faith community
seeking to live out the loving, just, and generous way of Jesus.
We are participants in a long tradition
that's less concerned with doctrines and dogma that demand total agreement,
but a life to be lived, enjoyed, and given away to others.
What unites us is a growing awareness that life is precious,
that we are made by love in order to love.
This community is comprised of and affirms the entire human family,
regardless of race, age, creed,
physical abilities, marital or economic status,
gender identity, or sexual orientation.
So, if you are curious and have come to see,
if you are tired and have come to rest,
if you are grateful and have come to share,
if you are wounded and have come to heal,
if you are joyful and have come to celebrate,
if you are uprooted and have come to belong,
welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Welcome home.
Hey, Crosspoint. So here's the thing. Even though my beliefs around the Bible have evolved a ton since I was much younger, one of the things that continues to compel me about the Bible is how much I can find my own story in the stories that we find there. How we find patterns in humanity that we often think are new when they happen to us today, but instead we start to realize that these are ancient patterns that people have been experiencing for thousands of years. And today I want to look at one of these stories that frankly is a pretty strange, somewhat obscure story, but one that I also think is so incredibly important for us to wrestle with. It was probably about a decade ago that I think I first read author Rob Bell talk about this story in a way that catalyzed me to wrestle with it more than I had previously done. And so his influence is going to be sprinkled throughout this teaching. But I think it's important that we spend some time and wrestle through it together. So this tremendously pivotal story centers around one of Jesus' closest followers, Peter. The same Peter who was sometimes called Simon, sometimes called Simon Peter, the same Peter who tried to walk on water, and the same impulsive Peter who said he would die before he ever denied Jesus, and then ended up denying three times. Yet, this is also the same Peter who Jesus chose to lead the first movement of Jesus' followers some 2,000 years ago, to kind of kick off the church. Now, a bit of background heading into this story. In the New Testament book of Acts, we're introduced to a man named Cornelius. And Cornelius is a centurion, a Roman soldier in the Italian regiment. Furthermore, it's important to note that Cornelius isn't Jewish. He's what Jewish people referred to as a Gentile or a non-Jewish person. And in this story, we read about how an angel appears to Cornelius and tells him to send for this man named Peter, who's staying in this town of Joppa at the time. So Cornelius orders a few of his men to travel about 40 miles to Joppa, find this man Peter, and bring him back to him. So, already the story is odd, but this is where I want us to pick it up. Acts chapter 10, starting with verse 9. It reads this way. About noon the following day, as they meaning Cornelius' men, as they were on their journey and approaching the city, Peter went up on the roof to pray. He became hungry and wanted something to eat. And while the meal was being prepared, he fell into a trance. Now, let's pause there for a moment. Because does anyone else find it strange that the author just talks about this like it's normal, that he just fell into a trance? I don't know about you, but I just can't breeze past that. So I want you to notice the original word in the Greek that the author uses here. It's the Greek word ekstasis. It's where we get our English word ecstasy. The prefix ek, which means out of, and stasis, which means state or standing. So whatever is happening here with Peter, it would seem that the larger point that the author is trying to convey is that whatever mystical divine experience Peter is having, that the point is that it's helping him move beyond his normal or typical state of mind. The way he usually sees and understands things, the way he usually sees and understands the world, his framework that he's used to operating with. But still, it's odd, right? The story continues, verse 11. It says, Peter saw heaven opened and something like a large sheet being let down to earth by its four corners. It contained all kinds of four-footed animals, as well as reptiles of the earth and birds of the air. Then a voice told him, get up, Peter, kill and eat. So again, this just is weird, right? It feels a bit like there should be some Grateful Dead or Pink Floyd providing the soundtrack for the story. But regardless, what Peter is seeing here in this story requires some context. So let's back up a bit. The foundational story of the Jewish people was Moses leading the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt, where they had been slaves for 400 years. In the Bible, you can read about that in the story of Exodus. Now, if you think about a people who had been in slavery for generations, it makes sense that they had no idea how to be their own people, their own tribe, how to form their own identity. And so many of the commands we find in the Old Testament of the Hebrew Scriptures were about helping a people who had been slaves learn how to be a tribe. Even the basics like the Ten Commandments, this is how you treat people, this is how you don't treat people. But the vision God cast for the Jewish people was to be a different type of tribe than the others that existed in their world at the time. What was normal historically was for ancient tribes to have a mindset of, how do we protect and preserve ourselves? I mean, how do we make ourselves better than all the other tribes? But the vision that God gave the Jewish people was different. It wasn't simply to exist for themselves, but to live in the world in such a way that they would be a blessing to all the other tribes, to serve other tribes. And this was a revolutionary idea for a tribal world. I mean, heck, it still is for the modern world in many respects. But it's why we see Jesus continue to emphasize that same message to the religious people of his day, trying to remind them, listen, you're supposed to be the light of the world, a city on a hill. You're supposed to be something beautiful, something radically different, but you've lost the plot along the way like all these other nations and peoples. And so we see Jesus throughout the Gospels trying to call them back to this original vision. Now, when you look through the Hebrew Scriptures, again, there's chapters full of all these different laws. Again, in this effort of helping the Hebrew people form an identity after 400 years of slavery, from the ways that they interacted with each other, how they worshiped, how they ate, how they worked, how they rested, pretty much any and every aspect of life. And specifically for the context of this particular story with Peter, there were dietary laws that were put in place about what the Jewish people could eat and what they should avoid. This is where the idea of eating kosher comes from. And so there's a lot of debate among scholars as to why all these dietary laws. Some think it's purely for health purposes. Others think it's more symbolic and that they served as one more way to distinguish themselves from other tribes. So that's the context here for this particular story. Peter has this vision, this dream, this mystical experience where he's described as seeing is that the sheet drops in front of him with all these different animals, and specifically animals that Jewish people were commanded not to eat. And the divine voice that Peter hears says, get up, kill, and eat. Now again, what we have to understand is there were Bible verses to back all these restrictions and laws, to back them all up. Bible verses that some Jewish religious leaders pointed to as the exact justification of why it was clearly sin, clearly outside of God's laws, to eat these kind of animals or even touch these kind of animals. And if you did, it would make you unclean. You became unclean before God and became a potential pollutant to the entire tribe. Furthermore, not surprisingly, this way of thinking also got transferred to how some very rigid religious leaders would also think about people, that some were clean and others were unclean. Again, there were large segments of people who started to lose the original plot, to the point where even a foundational Jewish idea of love your neighbor got interpreted by some rigid religious leaders as, well, that refers to just your Jewish neighbor, not a non-Jewish person, not a Gentile. And so other religious rules naturally developed over time that just became accepted as, this is the way things are. This is how God wants them. Because again, every religious authority could have their particular spin on a particular verse or justify the law or rule that they were passionate about. And over time, you had entire segments of people that didn't even question it. It just became part of God's law. And it became the majority accepted position of the day, basically kind of the cultural default. And the thing is, many of us know what that's like in our own stories, right? Again, the pattern isn't different today. Many of us grew up being told that there were just certain things you did and didn't do because that's what it meant to follow God or to be a Christian. For some of us, it was small things like, well, what kind of movies or TV shows that you're allowed to watch, whether dancing is okay or poker or the lottery or using certain words and how if we use those words, we'd upset God. But then for others of us, even if you change certain words to like, dang it, it was just as bad because God really knows what you're thinking in your heart when you say it, right? Anybody else ever get that one? Yeah. So for others of us, There were understood teams regarding who you voted for, what issues you had to care about the most, and whose side God was on. There were frameworks around race and gender and divinely established roles. And there were even national best-selling books that insisted, here is how you raise kids God's way. And there were even, here are the nations and the types of people that God really loves the most, and here are God's enemies. Here are the people that get included and get to go to heaven, and here are the people who will burn forever in a torturous fire unless we convince them to change their minds. And understand, the exact same thing was true for Peter. Peter had been raised in a tradition, handed a framework, taught, instructed, we can even use the words conditioned or programmed, to see and understand the world in a particular way in terms of what God wanted and what most honored God. And one of the central ideas to this way of thinking, understandably, was how he would eat. Because again, this was a daily decision that he faced. And so Peter sees heaven opened. This sheet drops with all these unclean animals. And Peter hears a voice that he understands as God say, get up, kill, and eat. Now notice what Peter says next, because this is just fascinating. It's so very insightful to our current world. Verse 14. Surely not, Lord, Peter replied. I have never eaten anything impure or unclean. The voice spoke to him a second time. Do not call anything impure that God has made clean. This happened three times, and immediately the sheep was taken back to heaven. So, all right, get this. Peter interprets this voice that is speaking to him as God. And God tells him, Peter, the world is not as restrictive as you've assumed and been taught. It's bigger than that. And what does Peter do? Peter starts arguing with God. God, you have no idea what you're talking about. There's no way I'm going to eat one of these animals that is against your law to eat. No way. I've never done that, and I'm not going to start now. And this argument goes back and forth, the text says, three different times. So again, this story, it's just so incredibly profound and insightful to the patterns we still find in ourselves. You see, Peter's belief that he is defending God's way ends up becoming an obstacle to him actually living in God's way. Peter is so loyal to his religion that he argues with and contradicts the God of his religion. And Peter is so sure that he's right that he actually gets it completely wrong. And you just think that pattern has any relevance to us today? But here's the thing that many of you are probably already seeing, right? This vision that Peter has surely is bigger than simply what kind of food he can eat, right? I mean, certainly something more significant is getting communicated in this story, right? And that's what we see starting in verse 17. While Peter was wondering about the meaning of the vision, while he's wrestling with it, thinking about it, the men sent by Cornelius, so remember Cornelius, the Gentile from the Roman army, found out where Simon's house was and stopped at the gate. They called out, asking if it was Simon, who was known as Peter, was staying there. While Peter was still thinking about the vision, the Spirit said to him, Simon, three men are looking for you, so get up and go downstairs. Do not hesitate to go with them, for I have sent them. Now, interestingly enough, Peter doesn't argue this time. There's no pushback on God. Instead, it just says this. Peter went down and said to the men, I'm the one you're looking for. Why have you come? The men replied, we have come from Cornelius, the centurion. He is a righteous and God-fearing man who is respected by all the Jewish people. A holy angel told him to have come to his house, to have you come to his house, so that he could hear what you have to say. Then Peter invited the men into the house to be his guest. The next day, Peter started out with some of them, and some of the brothers from Joppa went along. The following day, he arrived in Caesarea, and Cornelius was expecting them and had called together his relatives and his close friends. Now, verse 25. As Peter entered the house. So, it's important that we pause there for a moment, because that can read like a rather casual statement to us today. But understand, this was a revolutionary moment. As Peter entered the house. Because understand, for a Jewish man to walk into any Gentile's home, it was commonly understood and believed to be going against God's law. Now, again, some of that came from the scripture, and some of it came from religious rules added on that just eventually became accepted as God's law. But the bottom line was, it was understood that a faithful, law-abiding Jew would never walk into a Gentile's home, especially one who was in the Roman army. But there had been this awakening in Peter. God's Spirit had shifted something in Peter that transcended the belief system he had been conditioned to believe was God's belief system. And he was invited into something bigger and more beautiful. And so the story continues, verse 25. As Peter entered the house, Cornelius met him and fell at his feet in reverence. But Peter made him stand up, made him get up. "Stand up," he said. "I am only a man myself." Talking with him, Peter went inside and found a large gathering of people. He said to them, and this is just such a powerful statement, "You are well aware that it is against our law for a Jew to associate with a Gentile or visit him. But God has shown me that I should not call any man impure or unclean." So picture this, right? Peter crosses the threshold of the house, goes inside, and finds a large gathering of Gentiles. And I have to imagine it's one of those moments when the conversation in the room stops, right? People are mingling around, and then suddenly people just start staring at who just walked into the room, wondering what in the world is going to happen here. And Peter's opening line is, "You are all well aware that it's completely against my religion for me to hang out with you or even to step into this home. It goes against the laws and the scriptures that I've been told are central to me being part of my religion. But God, has shown me that this story that I'm now a part of, this way of following Jesus, is much bigger and more beautiful and more inclusive than I assumed. My religion told me this, but God, but Jesus, but God's Spirit has shown me something better." So, as we start to wrap up here, I want to offer a few more reflections on this story and the implications some of those insights might have on you and I today. One, in the story, it says that while Peter was pondering the meaning of the vision, while he was wrestling with the vision of the sheet that had he had seen and the voice that he had heard, that while he was pondering all that, the three Gentile men showed up at his door. Now, here's the thing. Very often, when change needs to happen in us, ideas need flesh on them. We need to see those ideas in flesh and blood, because here's what we all know. People can debate ideas and theories and interpretations and laws and policies, but things actually get real when those ideas become flesh and blood. When we're confronted with and spend time with actual people that we may have all sorts of preconceived ideas about, when we come face to face with how those policies, our laws, our religious interpretations, our biases affect actual people that we have taken the time to get to know and listen to their stories. All of us have experienced far too many people declare things in pulpits and in news articles and cable news stories and all over social media regarding their ideas or beliefs regarding people who are a different race than them, who belong to a different religion, who are a different gender, or who have a different sexual orientation, or who have a different political worldview than them. And they're so convinced that their ideas are right. And it even justifies them condemning them. But when you ask them, "Can you honestly tell me that you've taken the time to humbly listen to the stories of at least three different people or families who embody these ideas that you're so against?" The answer is almost always no. The way of Jesus isn't about loving ideas and serving ideologies. It's about loving and serving actual people. It's why in the opening words of John's gospel letter, it reads, "The word became flesh and lived among us." The words about God, the ideas about God became flesh so that we could get a glimpse of what God is actually like. Which is why when people can find themselves debating all sorts of things about what this passage of scripture means or this religious idea or this interpretation, we here at Crosspoint just keep coming back to the life, way, and teaching of Jesus, that we look to Jesus to try to best understand what God's heart is like. And so in turn, we should be very cautious talking about ideas or declaring positions on issues when we disconnect those ideas from the actual lived lives of people and who those ideas affect. When we haven't taken the time to sincerely listen to and understand firsthand how those ideas affect actual people. Secondly, let's not miss this detail again in the story. God's Spirit clearly contradicts something Peter's majority religious tradition had held for generations from their interpretation of their scriptures. Peter pushes back and tries to cling to the rigid, narrow rules and interpretations he had always known, because entertaining something else would obviously be so disruptive to so many aspects of his life. And yet, despite his arguing and pushing back in the name of his religion, despite how convinced he was that he was right and had the scriptures to prove it, he was still finding himself in opposition to God's actual heart. So this insight's been so helpful to me through the years, because here's the thing. It's my conviction that God's Spirit didn't stop speaking some 2,000 years ago when the last of the biblical authors wrapped up their writings. And we find that same Spirit in the New Testament pushing against laws and interpretations that we find in the Old Testament or Hebrew Scriptures. So within the Bible itself, understand, the Spirit challenges certain ideas, religious rules of how people previously understood their Scriptures and what God wanted. Again, even scriptures that seemed plain as day to them before. And each time the pattern is that God's Spirit is inviting people into a more expansive, inclusive view of the world and what it means to love actual people. And so today, even though I've always placed a high value on the Bible and find it compelling in so many ways, I don't care to give much energy to debating passages of scripture, because I'm much more concerned with what God's Spirit is inviting us into now, and whether it aligns with what we see in the life of Jesus. Now, a couple quick notes to that. Critical to that discernment process is that it's done in community, with other people, where there's a healthy, wise checks and balances, because when one person declares that they alone now have special insight, right, that's how things really go off the rails. That's how cults get formed. And then additionally, just to make it crystal clear, obviously that's not to say that tradition isn't important, that the scriptures aren't important. Absolutely they are. And if you've been around here in our community for any length of time, you know that's true. But we're not shackled by them, because what we see in the Bible itself is that being shackled to those doesn't often go well for actual people, and often can lead to going against God's heart. Now, there's one last thing that I want to speak to. For many of us on this journey, there's something inside of us, this nudging, this invitation to possibly entertain that the story that we're a part of could be more beautiful and inspiring than we previously thought we were even allowed to believe. Let's call it the spirit of the divine. But the thing is, there's this other voice that often feels like it's sitting on our shoulder, right? That won't go away, and it has this certain type of power over us where it says, why are you rejecting what you've always been taught? And honestly, why are you even rejecting us? I mean, who we are and what we believe, your tribe, your family, your community, what's happened to you? Why have you just let yourself get caught up in all these watered down ideas? And maybe that voice sounds like your parents, or maybe it sounds like the church community and leaders maybe that you were around growing up. And you keep wondering, why won't that voice on my shoulder go away? And it scares you to take that voice deep down inside you seriously, and you find yourself conflicted. Here's the thing. I just want you to hear me say, that's perfectly normal. Really. I mean, after all, when you think about that voice on your shoulder, does it come from people who in your younger years frankly kept you alive? Made sure you were fed and had clothes and had a roof over your head? Were they the same people who shaped your understanding about who you are? And who other people are, who God is, how relationships work, who shaped your ideas about sex, and how people in your tribe think about the world? Then of course, even as you start to develop different ways of seeing the world that may be bigger and more expansive than the ideas you were first handed, of course that process of learning to trust that inner voice may take a while. Because of course, the source of those voices likely also did a tremendous amount of good. They were filled with an immense amount of love for you, likely that shouldn't be dismissed. So it makes complete sense that you could struggle with that for a good while. It's just part of the journey. Again, we see the very same thing with Peter in this story from the Bible. What you're experiencing isn't unique. It's actually rooted in the pattern of people seeking after God's heart for thousands of years. It's just the story that we're a part of. Yet, there also come certain threshold moments. Moments where you stop arguing and you take a deep breath. And you start to choose to live into a new way of thinking that God's Spirit has invited you into. We're just like we see Peter in this story, standing in the doorway of Cornelius' home, where after arguing and pushing back, he eventually gets to the point where he chooses to trust the mystical voice of God's Spirit rather than just the tradition and the religious framework that he had grown up with. And he courageously crosses the threshold into the house of Gentiles, and he took God up on God's invitation into a bigger, more inclusive, more loving story. And certainly, there were people from his tribe that questioned that, who questioned whether he was still being faithful to God, whether he was just following the culture rather than following God. And certainly there were people that criticized him for that, labeled him for that. But that's what comes with threshold moments. So friends, here's to you and I. And here's to our community together, being willing to wrestle with and discern and trust the nudgings of God's spirits together. As God continues to move and invite us into better, more beautiful stories still today. And may we have the courage to cross those threshold moments when they come. You're loved.
If you would like to know more or get connected to Crosspoint, go to crosspoint.org. If you're in need of care or assistance, go to crosspoint.org/care. And welcome home.